Hey, Dan.
Hey, Jason.
Happy birthday.
Oh, thanks. That's very nice of you to say.
It only comes once a year.
It does, unless you're the queen.
Yeah, that's true. They'd like
it's
celebrate
weird.
Her birthday
why.
In June because the weather's nicer?
Is it that, or is that? I thought there was like the Office of Queen had like an official birthday. Some of our UK listeners, I'm sure, will set us straight.
Happy birthday, Office
yeah.
of Queen.
I mean, like, you are the Queen
we
as the,
are
as
the champions,
queen.
Yeah. My. Oh, wrong Queen. Sorry.
Here they are, the princes of the universe. Yeah, well, there we go.
What's going on with you?
What's going on?
What's wrong,
what
with,
is,
what's wrong with you, Dan?
What is going on with me? That's a great question. Mm.
There's a lot of stuff this week. A lot of stuff going on. I feel like this week is a freight train. Just Apple earnings happened, and
that's right.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, there's a lot. I had to laugh. I was at lunch today, just eating a sandwich in front of the TV, and I had Stephen Colbert Late Show on, and it was in his monologue. He talks about the Apple results, which is weird when that sort of thing happens. And the clip he showed is from some local TV news somewhere. And they must have picked the most ridiculous, like, panicked TV news clip they could find. Because literally the report, the woman on the newscast says, Apple released its worst corporate results in 13 years today. And I thought to myself, that's totally wrong. It is the worst results in 13 years in a very specific category, and it's of change, the difference of change, because the growth was not there. They shrunk a little bit.
Right,
they lost
right.
sales over year, but that is in no way the worst results they've had. So I'm wondering if that news reporter like took calculus or something, because it's like a very esoteric thing to have it be the worst in.
It sounds very news headline-y, right? Like, that's, I think, why the reason why you simplify it down to that. But you're right, it's not representative.
No,
representative of what's actually going on.
And it shows you how Wall Street thinking totally poisons. Because here's the other thing, is most people, I would argue, are, unless you throw in like retirement and stuff, which you shouldn't be fussing about. You should sort of just invest in whatever mutual funds or whatever.
Not that we're giving anybody financial advice.
I'm just saying, like, I think most people would probably recognize that playing the market day to day is a bad way to plan
yep,
your retirement.
But I don't know what you're talking about. It's working great for me.
Okay, good. So
can I borrow $20?
Yeah, no. You're just going to invest it in something.
A sandwich.
Well, that's a terrible investment. You get very little return, and the return you get, you don't want. Anyway, yeah. Hi, subscribers. Thanks for subscribing. the thing that I looked up is it was Apple's 10th most profitable quarter of all time. It was one of their four or five most revenue quarters of all time.
Mm-hmm.
It was their second best second quarter ever. They sold. Here's one that I really like. If you went back to January 1st of last year, and looked at what the record for most iPhones sold in a quarter was, this would beat it.
Mm-hmm.
because the iPhone sales, it's actually, three of the previous five quarters have been records, but
right.
But if you went to 2014, 51.2 million iPhones sold was more than any iPhone had sold up to that point. It's only 2015 and the first quarter of 2016
right.
that beat it. So in all of these measures, you know, for a bad quarter, and in some ways especially the stock market is looking for, it was a bad quarter, although almost exactly what they said it would be 3 months ago. But
oh, yeah.
In all the other measures, it's, you know, this is what kind of a bad quarter to have when you make $10.5 billion in profit.
Yeah, it is interesting to watch the response to this, because as you said, I mean, so Apple guidance, you know, that this is what they do. They try to peg the numbers, right?
And they nailed it. They were in the guidance.
Yeah, they give numbers they're confident about. If, you know, a lot of people were, it's not as though we were all, you know, sitting around going like, well, you know, maybe they'll make $7 billion more than they projected, right? Like, that was never going to happen. And yet people react in these very shocked sky is falling ways. I even had, you know, people I know, one of my cousins was like tweeting at me about how, you know, Apple needs to find the next big thing. And I'm sitting there going like, really? I mean, they still made $10 billion and sold 50 million iPhones. Like, Yeah, there's a Apple has set this impossible bar for itself sometimes with the idea that it needs to constantly be coming out with the newest, greatest, latest thing, right? And you're totally right that the you and I think Dr. Drang were both talking about, like, if you just pretend 2015 didn't happen, like, the curve actually makes sense. But 2015 was an outlier. It just happened to be, it was a very positive outlier, right?
Yeah, and Dr. Drang wrote his blog post that John Gruber linked to today as we record this on Thursday. He wrote it in January, right? I mean, this was not a surprise, right? Dr. Drang wrote his piece about this in January, and he got it exactly right. That I did that, actually, that exercise on Tuesday. I deleted 2015. And then the charts all look normal. Like 2015, yeah. I think it comes down to the pent up demand for a larger screened iPhone. Like, a lot of people were like, no, I got to get a new iPhone now because this is the big, and it may have something to do with maybe a particularly good moment in the economy in China or something like that. But, you know, it is looking more, since everything is measured year over year, 2015 and the iPhone 6 seems to be an outlier upward,
right,
more than this is a trend downward.
And of course, Tim Cook mentioned that several times. He talked a lot about the upgrade cycles, mm-hmm, right? And said the 6S, I think, is better than the 5S, but not as good as the 6, which was just really crazy high.
And in fact, somebody all the analysts kept asking him, like, well, what about this? And somebody was like, okay, Tim, theoretically, hypothetically, if your upgrade cycle for the 6S was like the 6, would you have lost sales? And he laughed, and he was like, absolutely not. It would have been an amazing quarter. Or we would have loved that. Like,
is that
very
the one
clear.
Where you say it would have been a party? Yeah,
it would have been a party. Exactly right. Like, it would have been out of control, but that didn't happen because the 6 is such an outlier.
Yeah, and so it's a question. I mean, and interestingly enough, too, we also got this, him talking about how successful the SE has been and how they have been surprised by the success of it, right? And I think it's interesting to hear that on both ends, right? That a smaller iPhone ended up being exceptionally popular, in part because it's probably more affordably priced, and the 6, when they came out, the sort of larger screened iPhone, was also super popular because there was probably a lot of pent-up demand for it, which goes to show you that, you know, a monolithic smartphone, one size fits all, maybe wasn't the right solution, at least once you exhausted that initial spurt of, like, everybody buying into the smartphone market. But, you know, the interesting thing, which I've seen some people bandying around, is the idea that, like, the smartphone itself as a product category is not really a repeatable thing, right? Like,
it's
or at least
not.
If it is, on the time scale, you got to, like, zoom way out on the time scale to see something that's going to have that big an impact again.
I'm not sure we've seen a product get uptake like that around the world from everybody in our lifetimes, actually.
No, I mean,
I'm not sure we have.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that anything has quite hit that. You know, I think you can make an argument for the computer over the lifetime of the computer as, like, not in the scale, but in terms of how much impact it had.
Sure, it just
but
took
it didn't
25
sell the same.
Years, right?
Exactly,
And the smartphone even reaches people who didn't have a personal computer,
exactly,
right? Because they couldn't afford that, but they can get a smartphone. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise, it's what is it? I mean, I was struggling with this, trying to think of it, and it's like, the radio, maybe? I mean, like, it's pretty...
The original telephone?
You gotta go really far to find a product like this. So it's not repeatable.
Yeah. And so, but the problem is Wall Street, as you said, always looking for growth, growth, growth. And at some point, that just doesn't make sense from some sort of a, you know, mathematical, larger, big picture. Because you look at things like, so we also got treated to that bit that these, you know, Apple Watch sales are in the first year outsold iPhone in the first year. Which is interesting. But then again, I think if you go back and look, iPad sales in the first year also, I believe, outpaced the first year of iPhone sales. Because the iPad had a tremendously strong start and has since kind of, you know, potentially peaked.
Yeah.
I don't know. They've said it might get better, but it's better than something that's really bad. So that's not necessarily good.
I think what I said about the iPhone is that it hasn't hit bottom yet, but it may be able to see the bottom from here. It still has to hit, but it's like, it seems like the rate, it's, you talk about esoteric and also calculus. This is another bit of esoteric math, which is the rate of decline of iPad sales is seemingly slowing. Okay.
Right.
iPad sales are still declining,
yes,
but they seem to be not
declining less slowly.
Well, it's worse. Yeah. They're not accelerating. The decline is not accelerating as much. I mean, it's still accelerating, but not as much.
Yeah. Well, you look at all these products, you look at all their products, and they all have very different, you know, cycles in them, right? Like you see the iPhone charts, right? And it looks like up, up, up. You see, you know, the iPad chart kind of looks, it kind of looks like a bell curve these days.
Well, it's starting. So you're talking about the iPhone 6. The iPad chart's sort of looking like an outlier. Like there was pent up demand for tablets, and there was a tablet mania, and then everybody who wanted a tablet bought one all at once, and then boo! Right at that point, there didn't need to be as many tablets in the market, but and so now it's just looking like an aberration. The question is, will it go down to zero? I don't think it will. Or will it go down to a lower level where it turns out some people didn't want a tablet after all, and everyone else just got a tablet, so they don't need to buy another tablet for another 4 years.
And the one that I really enjoy, actually, because I think it's kind of an interesting comparison, is the Mac chart, which is actually been incredibly stable, at least for the last several years. Like it hovers between like 5-6 million, like pretty consistently. And that's, you know, it's a stable product, right? Like that's what a mature product looks like, right? You're selling some, a pretty constant amount with slight, you know, fluctuations pretty much constantly, as opposed to these giant peaks and stuff, right? Because the Mac also has a long refresh rate, right? Like you don't buy a new Mac every year, probably.
I
certainly don't. I'm on a 5-year-old Mac here. So people buy new computers, and maybe eventually that will decline as more and more stuff gets shifted to things like smartphones and tablets. But right now it seems pretty constant. That's a mature business. Whereas, you know, the smartphone has seen nothing basically but growth since, you know, in the last decade. None of this, again, it's a lie. They're not going to go from 50 million iPhones this quarter to zero next quarter, right? No. Like, this is not falling off a cliff here. Someone should tell Chicken Little the sky's not falling.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're an investor, you may be upset by it. But this thing is, Apple is about as successful a company as there can be. But if you're somebody who's investing in stocks for big growth potential, you know, I think it's fair. This is one of those things where people are like, no, it's not fair that Apple gets hit when they made $10 billion in profit. It's like, yeah, but the expectations were already built into the stock. It's sort of how the stock market works. And, you know, you can like it or not like it. It's just sort of how it is. Apple's built a great business. It may not be much of a growth business anymore. And in fact, sometimes I get a little worried that companies seek growth and hurt their core business because they're so busy seeking growth in other places. And that would be like a loss of focus if they, like we talked about last week, could do a car or something like that. But it's just a wildly successful business. And you're right about the Mac. I was looking at the Mac stats, and you know, the Mac, if you look at like a Mac sales chart, this was a tough year for the Mac, although they say that they're going to be up next quarter. This was a tough quarter for the Mac. But over the long haul, if you look at the average Mac sales, it just motors along. And and I think that's, it all gets washed out by the iPhone. I mean, that's the bottom line, is everything gets washed out by the iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the stuff, you know, overall, like if you look at what the Mac's doing, you know, it's making 5.1 million in revenue. So like not like the size of, you know, it's a small business, essentially, right? Like they certainly couldn't sustain themselves on the Mac alone. But like, you know, they're making money in that business. So, yeah, you're right. But the iPhone is so insanely huge that everything else looks like peanuts.
Exactly. And any fluctuation in there, or in this case, you know, the unit of measurement, it being a year-over-year analysis, and you have an incredible blowout year, and everybody's immediate thought is, well, how are you going to beat that next year? And the answer is, we're not. and they're not.
but now that they've dropped again, maybe they'll beat that next year. Well, like who knows?
Yeah, the bar is a lot lower for next year, but this year's going to be. I mean, they said they're going to be down versus year over year third quarter as well. I think they're going to have to get through this year. I think this year what we've talked about, you're going to look at it. This year is going to be slight up from 2 years ago. But last year is going to be this aberration that's way up. And then the only question in the long run I have is, what's the trajectory after that? It looked like it was slow growth, not deflation, right? Not like the air gets let out of the balloon and iPhone sales go down and eventually Apple goes out of business in like 100 years. I don't think that's it. right? And Tim Cook, you know, talk to him, and he's like, I got all sorts of ways I'm optimistic about this. We got new markets, and we got people. We got a lower price phone that will reach people who we haven't reached before. And he's got all these, you know, he's got lots of ideas. But
as he should,
yeah. But we'll see. You know, 2017, the bar will be lower than it's been and will continue to be in 2016. But, you know, I'm people may know this from all the stuff I write about this is, you know, the investment side of Apple is not something I'm remotely interested in. Like, you know, news alert, I don't care. Like, I care about the products, and I care about the company's financial results in what it tells me about their strategy and their products. But in terms of the investing side of it, every now and then I think about, like, you know, people who specialize in that aspect of Apple as a business, and, you know, bless them, because I don't want to do that. I'm much more interested in the products.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talk about it because it's a necessity of sort of the holistic picture of the company. But I think we're always glad, you know, the week after the results come out, we can just let's move on to the next thing.
Yeah, we go back to the products instead of the financial journalists who go to the next company with the next analysis of their of their numbers.
Exactly.
And I have friends who have worked at business. News organizations, and, you know, I always looked at that and was like, wow, I don't think I'm wired like that. But it's interesting. The analyst call is always the highlight for me. This time, Luca, the CFO, actually used the phrase "more color" to say, Tim will give me more color, give more color to what I'm about to say. So he's like telling the boss, okay, I'm gonna draw the outline, and then you provide the color, boss, which actually always tickles me.
Yeah, little known fact, they actually all sit there with those adult coloring books.
Yeah.
You know, they're just coloring stuff in.
It's all just the Apple logo.
I was going to say the 6-color Apple logo. There you go.
Well, they can choose. They can do it in monochrome.
Ooh, I like monochrome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun. I'm not very good at the whole colors thing.
Michael Gartenberg, the analyst who used to work at Apple and now is writing for iMore, his Twitter bio makes me laugh every time I see it, because he says, I will always bleed one monochrome color, which is like, don't we all?
I guess it depends. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if there's any more about the call. I transcribed it and you live tweeted it. So, you know, it was a lot of what we've talked about. It was the SE was surprising, and China was not great, although Tim Cook sort of threw Hong Kong under the bus there. He was like, it was really bad in Hong Kong. He did an amazing bit of like Ledger Domain where he was like, I know it's 20, but it's really 16. But if you really look at it, it's 7. And by our measurement, it's really more like 5. I mean, he just was taking an NC, so it's fine. I just like, wow, that is a very impressive bit of rhetoric where he just kind of keeps redefining it and it gets smaller and smaller.
Just a reminder that numbers can mean anything you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We like to think that they're these really hard, like, you know, factual things, and as it turns out, totally manipulatable.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way he phrased it was just pretty. It was pretty remarkable. Along with saying he was optimistic like 7 times, he did that redefining thing, which is let me walk you through it just because it's fun. It's a 26% decline, but he's like, well. Most of that was in Hong Kong. On mainland China, it was really 11% down on sales. And if you take the currency and it's a constant currency basis, then it's actually only 7. And then if you really just look at sell-through, which is what we look at, I mean, that's really what's important. It was only 5%, and it's like, boom, there you go. That's why that guy's the CEO.
Whatever you say, Mr. Cook. Yeah, that's 5. Do I hear 3? I hear 2?
So you're up in China then. Yes, we are.
There was some interesting talk about services, which of course they made a big deal about last quarter.
Yeah.
And they didn't talk quite as much about it. I saw a lot of people saying they were backing away from. I don't think they were necessarily backing away. I mean, that services was one of the few sectors that they were actually up in.
Yeah.
My favorite comment from that was that Luca actually said that they think their music business has reached a quote inflection point, which I really took to mean we think it's bottomed out and it can nowhere to go but up.
Yeah,
from here.
He said, you know, it's been going down the last few quarters. So, you know, they wouldn't have talked about that, and they didn't talk about that. But now that they feel like it's going back up, they're going to be like, oh yeah, it was really bad before. It was really bad, but now it's good. Like, that's like, you only ever tell that at the end.
It's weird too, because it's also like why? Like, what do you think has actually changed in that business. Do you think Apple Music has improved that much? Are more people buying music again? That seems unlikely.
I think it's Apple Music is growing, and the iTunes, you know, music sales while going down the drop is being offset by the growth from Apple Music.
Yeah, I that seems to be what they're implying to me, and I just. It's interesting. Tim Cook also made a comment about that being their first subscription service, which some people got up in arms about, but which I wrote a thing about on Six Colors explaining what I think he was getting at.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, I think he views this as a product in and of itself, unlike so many of the other services, because obviously they have things that are, you know, based on a subscription model like iTunes Match and iCloud. I don't think any of those are more like features that are paid for over like on a recurring basis than something like Apple Music, which is something that they're actively pushing and trying to draw people into the platform with. And I think, you know, as we've heard over the last couple of years, Apple is definitely interested in doing some sort of video subscription service, has not figured out what that looks like and has not been able to get all the content providers on board, you know, and have it be something that they actually want to make. So that's still kind of out there floating around as a thing, but I don't think we should discount it as something that will probably happen within the next few years.
Yeah. I'm going to be one of those people who says I feel like they did kind of back away from services a little bit. Not in the sense that it is important. They've called it out. It is growing. They were trumpeting how it's growing. They talked about like our first subscription service. Maybe there'll be another one. But the way that so Steve Milanovich of UBS asked kind of point blank, what's the deal with services? You've highlighted it the last two quarters. Is it a primary driver of earnings? Or, and he totally slanted it here. He was like, or as I believe, it's more like it supports the ecosystem and supports hardware margins over time and is subservient to hardware. And so this is basically setting up Tim Cook to say, so is your business strategy sell hardware and then keep just tightening the screws on squeezing more money out of everybody who uses your hardware in the services side? Or are the services, you know, primarily there to make the hardware, to accrue value to the hardware and make the whole ecosystem bigger and better? And Cook took the opportunity and he said, the most important thing for us is to have a great customer experience. Overwhelmingly, the thing that drives us are to embark on services that help that and become a part of the ecosystem. In doing so, we've developed a large and profitable business. And so we wanted to pull back the curtain on it, he said. So I like that response because that was one of the things that kind of gave me the heebie-jeebies last quarter was, you know, because there's another way for a company to approach this, which is what I said before, which is, well, we got them where we want them, and now we're gonna squeeze all the money out of
nickel and diming.
Yeah, after they buy the product, you're not buying the product. You know, you get the product, and then we are going to sell you a whole bunch of crap while you use the product, right? Which is actually more of an Amazon model, where mm-hmm. but Amazon's upfront about it. It's like, well, this is a cheap thing. In not all cases, I got the new Kindle, that ain't cheap, but you know this is a cheap thing, but it's a vending machine, and then you buy stuff from us. Well, with Apple,
that's where we make our money.
Apple's whole corporate identity is the thing we're selling you is really good. And so if they became like a nickel and diming kind of thing, I mean, that's how I feel about that 5 gigabyte free iCloud storage. Like, it needs to be
absolutely.
It makes you seem cheap. You're supposed to be a premium company. This is a service. You know, you need a better free tier. And then, yes, sell the services above that. So I like that he said this because that was the one thing that I've been asking myself when they put that stuff in the documentation the last two quarters is how I get why you're doing this because you know that the iPhone is going to fall short and you want to point to something as a growth area. And that's great. But it could also be read this other way that, oh no, you know, we're going to turn to services and we're going to just pull $30 or $40 a month out of all of the suckers who are buying our phones now.
Sure. I never really saw it as going that direction, if only because I agree with you completely that Apple is about devices. I was kind of hoping more it was in a sense of, you know, hey, we've realized we need to make our services better.
Yeah, well.
And that is a really important thing, you know, and so treating it as sort of a separate business. And we read there was this, it was Ben Thompson's piece, right, about... I'm thinking correctly about the management and like the services management and why Apple has so much trouble with services management. I think you linked to that last week, 2 weeks ago, about the paint company.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love that allegory.
Yeah. It was. I've already forgotten all this. Was it DuPont?
Is it DuPont? I think it was DuPont.
I think it was DuPont. Yeah. About like sort of how do you manage a business that has all these things? And his point being, part of the challenge that Apple is dealing with when it comes to services is that there isn't a sort of services organization that cuts across. Yeah. All swaths of Apple's business.
And Apple is used to shipping products and saying, here's the product, it's out the door. And services don't work like that.
We've seen a lot of bad Apple services as a result.
Exactly right. I mean, the example with DuPont was they were a gunpowder manufacturer, and they just sold it by the ton to, like, the army. And it was not a problem. And their manufacturing process for paint is very similar to gunpowder. Turns out, which is fine, except you don't sell tons of paint to the army and walk away. You sell them to people in stores.
Right.
And so the product was similar, but the business model was completely different. And they had this whole sales and marketing organization that was built around selling, you know, tons to the army. And it didn't make sense. And Ben Thompson's point is iPhones are gunpowder and services are paint. Like, your culture doesn't fit this kind of product. And that, I thought that was one of the best explanations for why Apple services are so weird. Because it is true, Apple has excelled in making a certain kind of product a certain kind of way and doing it really well. And then there's services. And I think fundamentally, they're not the same, right? They need a different kind of discipline. And Apple has, there are bright spots. But I think nobody would say that Apple's totally got services down. And, you know, it's one of their weaker things that they do.
Yeah. And if you look at some of their management in terms of that, they group even more than that. All the services they make are not the same thing. So services includes things like iCloud, but it also includes Apple Music and the App Store and the iTunes Store. And, you know, all of those things have different uses slash different, you know, models, right? Like, selling, yes, both the iTunes and Apple Music sell music, but they do it in very different ways.
Yeah.
And then you have iCloud in the mix, which has some recurring, you know, costs to it, but is totally different from just like a technology standpoint. And so then you have them all sort of verticalized under, you know, Eddie Q, or at least now you have some stuff under Phil Schiller as well. And so I think, you know, a lot of the reasons, especially stuff like iCloud, gets kind of lost in the mix is because I think Eddie Q as a services guy is much more focused on making deals and, you know, working on Apple Music and iTunes and the App Store. And I think iCloud kind of gets short shrift, and iCloud more than those others needs to work very well with all the other products. You know, yes, your Apple Music should work on your Mac and should work on your iPhone, but, you know, essentially we're just playing back music in those places. iCloud has very specific, you know, sort of syncing stuff that's got to go across all the different platforms. It's got storage stuff, you know, all of that is very complicated. And you essentially it's relegated under somebody who themselves is not a, you know, not really a technologist person, right? Like, you know, not in the same way that the iPhone and the Mac and software are under people who are specifically, you know, have worked on those things, right? Like, you know, Craig Federighi runs the software division because he's a software guy. Eddie Q is not a software guy or a hardware guy, really, but he's running kind of a businessy angle on it. So there's some work that needs to be done there if they want services to be better than they are now. And I'm not just talking about profitable, but I'm talking about the way that they function and, you know, their reliability and all of that stuff. I think they need to take a hard look at how exactly they're making that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be an ongoing challenge for them. And it's their biggest challenge, I think.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting times for Apple, right? This is the having the iPhone be so successful does lead to all these other questions. About where they go from here. And we talked about the car rumors last time about growth and how they're perceived in the investing community. I mean, I think there's a reason why the Google and Facebook stock is structured the way it is, right? They basically have said, look, we're going to, you know, you can invest in us and thanks for that, but we're going to manage our company in a certain way. And I do sometimes worry that Apple may down the road end up in a situation where there are problems with the board or problems with the shareholders because Apple's, Apple's not providing, even if they're throwing off $10 billion a quarter, they're not providing them the growth they're looking for. And that's always my fear with these companies is what I said earlier, which is they end up losing their way because they're trying to please investors instead of running a good business and pleasing customers. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. Interesting, though. Interesting times. To all this. Also, I got a Kindle, I should say.
But oh, yes. Speaking of which, yeah. as we are recording this, Amazon released its financial results for the quarter.
Yeah, any charts with no numbers on it?
I liked Jeff Bezos said in his statement, Amazon devices are the top-selling products on Amazon, whatever mm-hmm. that means, and customers purchased more than twice as many Fire tablets than first quarter last year.
Yeah.
That's twice as many as something.
That's right.
They mentioned the Echo. They can't keep it in stock. They actually made money this year, though, this quarter. They made $500 million, which is pretty good.
Congratulations.
And their revenue went way up. But as The Verge has an excellent chart showing just how inconsistent their profits are, and it looks like a yo-yo.
Well, they tank it. I mean, it seems to me that they the last couple of quarters they've shown profits. I think they're tired of being referred to as the company that doesn't make a profit. But I feel like so much of what they do is like they spend money. It's like I feel like Amazon calculates out what it wants its profit to be, basically, like yeah. and manages and will spend money to get it to be down or up. Or, yeah.
And they want revenue growth.
I think they used to shoot for zero.
Tend to go up, but
And it seems like their last two quarters have been 482 and 513. So it seems like they used to target break even, and now they're targeting half a billion in profit.
Yeah, but they've been as low as losing $437 million. So it's really all over the place.
It is
fascinating. Amazon. Fascinating company. They are. I'm glad we don't cover them all the time.
I think it's really interesting.
But I think they make interesting devices. You were saying you got a new Kindle Oasis.
Yeah, I got the Kindle Oasis, which Scott McNulty also got one, and I think Mark Arman got one. And I'm hoping we're going to have Scott on Upgrade as a follow-up guest this week and talk about it now that we've got it. It's better. I mean, here's for you subscribers, you get to know this now. It's better than I thought it would be. In looking at the pictures, I was like, really, is this that much better? And they say it's thinner and smaller and lighter, but whatever. And then I took it out of the box. I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what I expected, but it is a fraction of the size that I thought it was in all the dimensions. I just thought it would be bigger, and it's not. It's tiny. It is super thin and light and tiny. And so I need to spend some time reading on it, but at first glance, I'm actually quite impressed with it. And the battery case too. The battery case, you get the sense of like, oh, it's going to be a battery case. It's going to be big and clunky. It's going to add bulk and all of that. The battery case, I took the battery case out and I was like, is this it? Am I missing something? Did it not go in the box? Like, no.
Is the battery not in the case?
It's this little tiny thing. I mean, it's all quite small. So, and physical page turn buttons. Woo, that's the life. So, anyway, I'm impressed by it. It's still ridiculously expensive. I think I would recommend for most people that if they want to buy a Kindle, they should do what you did, get a Paperwhite. But that said, as somebody who's kind of a Kindle fanatic, the Oasis is looking pretty good so far. So that's one hour review of it.
I've always been a little bit behind the curve on the Kindle. So I'm going to stick with that for the time being, unless someone, tells me some reason that's super compelling.
I think the Paperwhite is in many ways the best Kindle they've ever made because it has such a good combination of features and a good price and sort of mainstream appeal. The fact that it's got the lighting on it and the screen looks really nice. And I think those are all the reasons why it's like it's the Kindle now.
Yeah,
like,
several weeks in, I still find myself marveling at how sharp the text is on it compared to my old Kindle. And I opened up my old one, which I gave to my mom, and was looking at it. I was like, oh God, this is so bad. I'm sorry I'm giving this to you.
It's 300. I mean, 300 DPI, which back in the days of laser printers, I mean, that was like, oh my goodness.
Gold standard.
Exactly right. And their fonts are not the greatest.
No, they're fine. I'm not a font guy.
I'm not a hardcore font nerd, but they could look better. And their typography, it could be better than it is. But It's still a lot of fun. So I'm working on that one.
I was going to say on the devices side, I just bought because I think Dan Frakes actually linked to a sale of the on Earth Day, Belkin was putting some discounts up on some of its smart switches. So I bought a Wemo Insight switch, which is a little more compact version, essentially, of what I already have, which is the old Wemo switch. Except this one also, I guess, lets you measure things like electricity usage.
I have one of those, yeah.
It's interesting. I've realized I actually don't know what else to connect to. A, because I'm in part limited by what plugs are actually in use in my house, and it won't fit in some of them. Because, for example, one of the lamps in my living room is plugged into something directly next to a bookshelf, and the Wemo switch is too wide.
It will not fit.
And some of my other things are plugged into power strips slash, you know, like cord extension cord things, and won't necessarily fit or well in those either. So the thing I kind of think I'm looking forward to now is when summer rolls around, I have to pull my air conditioner out and put it in my bedroom. I think I'm going to hook it into that, both because I think that's an interesting place to see where the power consumption is.
Yes.
And because being able to turn on my AC unit from like my phone, no matter where I am, actually seems super useful.
Yeah, I think that's good. I mentioned on Clockwise yesterday in a bit that got cut out because we were way over time. That I'm also struggling with this. I have a dehumidifier, and I thought that would be perfect because I could set the dehumidifier to turn on and off, and I could actually get the humidity in the house and even toggle it, you know, or connect it to that. Except for one problem, which is toggling the power on the dehumidifier
resets it.
Doesn't turn it on and off. There's a button you have to press when right. And so that won't work. And there are a lot of devices like that, that toggling the power has to actually be useful or it's pointless. And so I'm still struggling with it. I was going to use it for my heater. And I've written about this a couple of times, my heater out here in my garage. If this, then that doesn't allow you to set like my Eudora mail filters 15 years ago were more sophisticated than if this, then that. I really want to, you know, I want a web. I can get a web service that says what the temperature is in my garage. I bought like a little smart sensor and a little box and all that. I got that, all of that. But, and if I was a programmer, I could do it myself. But it just frustrates me to no end that if this, then that doesn't let you say, you know, if it's this temperature and after this time, then trigger it. Nope. You can't do conditionals. You can't nest things. It's like they're all just triggers. It goes, you know, if this happens, then that happens. And you know, like the name says, it's if then, and that's all that it is capable of doing.
Doesn't the Wemo, I think, has some sensor. There are some sensor units for Wemo that I think you can use to trigger stuff on the Wemo outlets, but I'm not really.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a way to do it. And I, you know, I ended up buying the plug-in thermostat, which does, it's made to do that. It's not smart about it, but it does do the job. But as a result, the only thing that I've really used my Wemo switch for is Christmas lights. But that was pretty great. I set up an if this then that for my Christmas lights to turn on and off. And it actually worked in concert with the smart light bulbs I have outside the house. So they would all kind of come on together and go off together, and they'd be on in the morning and they'd be on in the evening. And that was pretty neat. But since then I'm sort of back to not quite sure what I'm going to do with them.
Yeah, I'm still on the fence about the smart light bulb thing. Maybe if there's a sale at some point, I might invest and try them out. But I'm still feeling kind of iffy about them.
Yeah, I have them because I thought they were fun, but I've yet to find a practical use for them. But you know, it'll happen eventually.
Yeah, well, pretty soon all of our lives will be automated. We won't need to do anything.
Well, I've got these, you know, I've got six cans in my living room, can lights, you know, the recessed lights. And I saw at Home Depot the other week that they make smart versions of those now. And I thought, okay, well, that would be a lot of money to get the smart versions of those lights. And then I have two big light switches that I would have to cover or put tape over, danger tape over. And then I'm using my phone, I guess, to, and I just thought, I don't want those to be smart, you know?
Yeah.
And
it makes it more difficult, honestly. Yeah. Like even if you wire it into your Echo, for example, it makes it more annoying to have to do that via either your phone or saying it aloud all the time,
right?
That's the problem. If you could do it, if that was an option and you could also hit the switch on the wall, cause you know, light switches been around for a while, kind of useful. Then I think that would be more appealing, but that requires a little more work.
Yeah, we talked about this on Upgrade. That's the future. That's the dream of the future. But in the meantime, we're all retrofitting our existing dumb living spaces with smart tech, and it all doesn't, you know, doesn't work that well. But, you know, one day it'll all make sense, and those light switches will be, you know, telling the smart bulbs what to do, just like the internet can. But not yet.
And the robot butler will make us tea in the morning and bring it into us.
Jeeves, turn the lights lower, please, Jeeves. Yes, sir. And it'll roll over, and it'll just go boo on the switch. That'll be what your robot butler will do. All right. Well, that's it for this one. Happy birthday again, Dan.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors and keeping the lights on the website.
the smart lights on the website.
We use the internet to keep them on. Yeah. And we'll see you again next week with another secret podcast. Goodbye.
Bye.